Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight. Download the new Sport Clips haircut app and check in.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
After watching the NFL on Sunday, which team poses the biggest problem to the Bears' playoff dream? Green Bay, Kansas City, or Minnesota? And percentages be damned, how confident are you in the Bears' ability to win out?
Wow. Even if they win out, it could be a problem. I'm not overly confident in their chance to win out, unfortunately. I think the team that poses the biggest problem is the next one up. I mean, they're in an elimination stretch of their schedule. So if they go into Green Bay and lose, I would imagine that the playoff dream vanishes with that. So that makes Green Bay the biggest problem for the playoff dream, because it's the next game. If it were Kansas City here, that would be the next problem. If it were Minnesota, it's just they are in such dire straits that that percentages can't be damned, sadly. And I am not confident in their ability to win out. I think I felt pretty good about the Bears with their victory, and you felt good with them beating Dallas on Thursday, but then you kind of see the reality of how far behind they are, and you watch these teams, and it's just sort of an impossibility at this point. 3 games left. You really needed Detroit to do something dramatic against the Vikings. It was bad that the Rams won, and the Rams seem like their offense has come around a bit. So that's not good for the Bears. So I think that I am not confident that they can win out. I think they play some good teams, and I think it's going to be difficult to do. And I think all those teams are playing for something. Certainly, if it ends up being Minnesota in the last game of the year and the Bears have won 2, I would imagine that there's a possibility that could be a game that matters. So that would mean that the Vikings will probably have to win that game. We'll see. But I'm not overly confident after the results yesterday.
Yeah, it was a tough day for the Bears, I think, because you watched all day and you waited for something to happen that would benefit you, and it never came. 538.com has, I think, the chances now reduced to 3%, which you went back to where you were before you beat the Cowboys. That's not a good shot. And you look at what's going on in the division, and you start to play the game like, okay, had the Bears actually won 2 of the games that they should have won, would they still be in a position on the outside looking in? How good would you feel about the things going down the stretch here? You feel a lot better, certainly, if you were sitting there at 9 victories than you would be sitting there at 7-6. If you look at the Packers yesterday, they struggled with the Redskins at Lambeau, the same venue we're going to be watching them play the Bears next Sunday. I think that the Bears have a pretty good shot at beating the Packers because of what's at stake, because of how well the respective teams are playing at this point in time. It's still Aaron Rodgers. They're getting Akeem Hicks back. We'll talk about that. So I think that is a game of the three is the most winnable to me. The problem is that the Chiefs look like a team that if they can do what they did yesterday and go into Foxborough and beat Tom Brady and the Patriots with that defense playing better than it has been, and Patrick Mahomes doing what he needs to do, like he always does, then I think that could be a big problem. And if they happen to somehow, pull that one off, you still have to go into a building in Minnesota that you don't typically play well. So I don't know that it looks good for the Bears' chances to win out. That certainly, and they could, it would be fitting the way this season has gone, that they do somehow find a way to win out and you still be on the outside looking in at 10-6. Because those Rams, boy, Goff can be Goff last night and he could throw the pick six, but Gurley gets going and they win, and that's, you know, that's a team in front of you as well. So not a great day to be a Bears fan.
If we go ahead and assume that something's on the line in week 17 at Minnesota, and that would be an accomplishment based off their 3-5 start halfway through the season. And even though it looks like a tough matchup for the Vikings, they haven't beaten the Bears since Matt Nagy's been here. It's one of those two division road games. Thielen should be 100% healthy. He's back on the field yesterday, only had one target. And Minnesota is the only undefeated team at home left in the NFL. So I think that Minnesota game would be very tough, but I'd be happy if they're actually playing for something in Week 17. But I'm not confident that that's going to be the case because of these opponents coming up. To get to that point, though, of course, Green Bay and Kansas City are first. Are the Bears from Thursday going to continue to show up? Then I would say, yeah, they can win out. They're buying into this one game at a time mentality, but they're going to have to do it without Roquan Smith. You're going to have to get a Trubisky like that on the road, something we haven't seen yet. It just becomes too much in the NFL. The Titans are playing as well as anyone with Ryan Tannehill leading the offense, and they have a tough road down the stretch, so I don't think they're going to win out. They've got Houston twice. They've got New Orleans coming up. Just a brutal stretch here, but I do give the Bears credit. They are really buying in to Matt Nagy.
Yeah, I mean, you guys brought up earlier in the show, you know, pretty much everything that could have went the wrong direction for the Bears yesterday kind of happened, and they didn't even play. We all came in on Friday, and we were feeling good, and they beat down Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, and everybody's optimistic all over again. And then yesterday, you know, you can't get a favor from the Lions or the Seahawks or whomever, and this is the position that they put themselves in. You know, when you lose games to the Raiders and the L.A. Chargers, and you're dropping games on the schedule against teams that you're better than, that you're more talented than, you need help from them later in the season. You know, they did it to themselves, and they're seemingly looking better right now. Maybe they're finally getting things right. Could be too little too late. I'm not sure, but it's the NFL. You know, anybody can beat anybody on any given day. And if the Bears won out, I would be surprised, but it wouldn't be the most shocking thing in the world to me. It would be almost appropriate, as you guys kind of brought up as well, that if it did end up going down the stretch, this terrible portion of their schedule with all these tough teams, they beat them all, and then they still don't make the playoffs. That would just be like the I don't know if it would be ironic, but it would certainly be very unfortunate, and they can only blame themselves for their miscues that they had earlier in the year. It's a tough situation to be in.
I'm refusing to look ahead, okay? This week is all about the Packers. It is every time these two teams line up, regardless of the schedule. It is all about the Packers. It is Packer week, baby. They are going to Lambeau. And it's so weird. Like, 2 weeks ago against the Giants in the snow, Aaron Rodgers looked like, uh-oh, like something was clicking, and look out. Now, did yesterday, they didn't need to do too much, so they just ran the ball, threw the ball to the running back, played it low-key. You know, they're going to play possum. Oh, yeah, you know, we can just barely get by the football team that's located in the national capital. Okay, well, listen, it's about the Packers this week. That's it. I don't care about 3%, 2%, 1%, 80%. Just focus on beating those you-know-whats north of the Cheddar Curtain.
That's a great question.
How much better will the Bears be with Akeem Hicks back in the mix? Will his presence overcome the loss of both inside linebackers, or are you expecting Danny Trevathan to be back as well?
I don't think Trevathan will be back. I don't think that's a reasonable expectation. Possibly they're hoping that will be the case because they haven't put him on injury reserve yet. I don't think it will be something that it affects this weekend because obviously that would be too quick and he's not back to practice. Akeem Hicks, big difference. Big difference in a running defense that will need him against the Packers. The Packers, as much as they struggled 20-15 beating the Redskins, they, you know, winning ugly according to Aaron Rodgers, they ran the ball 28 times and he threw the ball 28 times. This balance, you know, is something that the Bears have to respect. And so when you have Aaron Jones going for 134 yards on the ground, that underscores the need for Akeem Hicks. So the Bears definitely will be back in a different defense with him in the middle. Because the attention that the Packers will have to play him, he'll be ready to go. He'll be presumably healthy. And when you have a healthy and motivated Akeem Hicks, he's a guy and a force to be reckoned with. You wonder what effect that'll have on Khalil Mack, who plays pretty well his last trip up to Lambeau Field. So that will be something to watch from the Bears' defensive line. Will it be enough? As I said, I think the Bears could beat the Packers. I think this is a matchup that, you know, without picking it on Monday morning, it's looking like a game that is not in, it's not an insurmountable challenge. So getting Hicks back is a big part of the reason why.
I'm not sure how, what condition Akeem Hicks is in, because they don't practice, right? We know they don't practice. They don't hit. So it's going to be his first live action, basically, since he got hurt. And I'm not saying that he isn't a monster, that he hasn't physically recovered from some of the ticky-tack stuff, but I don't know where his conditioning is at this point. I don't know how much road work he's been doing. I don't know how the injury has affected him in that context. I think that Danny Trevathan may come back before the year is out, but I don't think it's this week. And I think that they're going to be, you know, Akeem maybe makes up for the undermined linebacking position. But, you know, you move those guys in and out a lot on the defensive line, and I would imagine they'll have to do that a bit with Akeem Hicks. So I think it's a problem that that Roquan is going to be out, and Trevathan is going to be out. And, you know, it's great to have guys come in and do well in a game, but I don't know how much that carries over. I don't know if that catches up to you. I don't think it's ideal that you have lost your two inside linebackers, and I think Akeem is a big presence and a big reason that the Bears could do some damage, but I need a little more information on where he's at conditioning-wise.
Yeah, that's a big question. Okay, if Hicks is out there, how much is he actually going to play? How many snaps? If he's 100% ready to go, much better. One of the biggest weaknesses on the team and the biggest weakness defensively, no doubt, since Hicks has been gone, has been stopping the run. And if Hicks is out there for the majority of the game, I don't think any of us are going to say, hey, where's Khalil Mack? How come he isn't showing up? But as far as this week goes, yeah, David mentioned Aaron Jones with the big game, 192 scrimmage yards yesterday. But if Hicks is healthy, yeah, he's so good. I think for this week, you can overcome the loss of the linebackers, but then you get into a much bigger problem with Andy Reid around the corner than Dalvin Cook. But I think for 1 week, the defense could actually be better if Hicks is ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge addition. You know, it's almost like making an acquisition later in the year to kind of bolster your defense. This is, you know, one of the better interior defensive linemen in the NFC. Missing him so long this year has been a bummer. Obviously, he hasn't been handling it that well at all. He's a little touchy sometimes every now and then. But, of course, we all know about that. The Danny Trevathan thing, yeah, firsthand experience. With Danny Trevathan, it's kind of weird because he went down with that injury. It looked horrible. The elbow was contorting in ways that elbows should not be contorted in. But they didn't put him on the IR like everybody thought that was going to happen. He's constantly on the injury report. He's not participating. He's doubtful. He's out, whatever. But he's still, you know, kind of floating around. And that's kind of bizarre to me. So with Hicks, I'm confident that, you know, he could have played against the Cowboys had he been eligible to do so. I think he's going to come right back in and play well. The Trevathan thing, though, is a little bit weird for me, you know, being able to come back from that injury that was just about a month ago. So will be very interesting to see, you know, who's out on the practice field this week, who's ready to go, what you're listed as. And if they get those guys back to cover up some of the other injuries that they've had to endure here recently, it's, you know, be feeling pretty confident going to the Brat Stop and up to Lambeau this weekend.
Listen, he's not going to make the defense worse, that's for sure. I mean, can he cover completely? No, but that's a heck of a guy to have added to the defensive tackle rotation, right? I mean, absolutely. This is it's going to be better. It's not going to be worse. It's going to be better. And can he cover for both guys? No, he cannot cover for both guys, but he will make that interior defense much, much better.
It's a great question.
What move would you recommend for the White Sox in right field? Signing Marcell Ozuna, Nicholas Castellanos, or trading for Mookie Betts or Jock Peterson? And what would you give up for guys with just 1 year left on their deal?
Well, I'm all over that. I mean, I really like the idea. I think Mookie Betts would cost more than Jock Peterson. So I saw that.
That's an entirely different shopping center.
Yeah, yeah. But I saw that the proposed trade, or one of the, you know, some genius came up with a proposed trade where the Sox would give up Dane Dunning, Ronaldo Lopez, and Bisabi, the outfielder they got in the Chris Sale trade. So
that's it.
That would be the thing.
That's all
you don't give up for Mookie Betts.
How much does Mookie Betts does that get you back?
It gets you 1 year of Mookie Betts.
A finger?
His left arm.
It gets you 1 year because, of course, he's heading to free agency and unlikely to re-sign with the White Sox. I would imagine that deal could probably get you Jock Peterson, and maybe he'd stick around. I don't know. I mean, look, I'll take any of the four of them, okay? I would happily take any of the four of them. It doesn't bother me if we start worrying about Ozuna or Castellanos' defense. I want those bats in the lineup, and yeah, I'm all over it. So go ahead and pay a guy or trade for a guy, get it done.
Yeah, I like all those ideas. Of the three, I mean, Mookie Betts, first of all, I don't think it's realistic. So I don't know that's really – we can discuss it. We can contemplate it. But, yeah, it'd be great to get a Mookie Betts, but you're not going to get him for that price. And I'm not sure that, that makes a whole lot of sense for the Red Sox. But, okay, so Ozuna, that is the rumor. That was the report that was shot down. He's still in play. He would be exciting. He'd be a live bat. He has some defensive liabilities, even though he won a gold glove. I think he had shoulder surgery that maybe has impaired his throwing ability in the past couple seasons. I like Castellanos. I know the price tag will be high, but he would still be my number one priority in right field for the White Sox. Jock Peterson would be fine, if depending on what you would have to give up. It wouldn't be much, I don't think, because the Dodgers are probably trying to clear some space there. One way or another, just in their lineup, because they have a lot of guys to choose from. So of those three, I think that I would rank them Castellanos, Ozuna, Peterson, with Betts certainly at the top of the list, but that would be like a wish list that's not going to come true. What would you give up for guys with 1 year left on your deals? I think you've got to be smart about it. I also think that you know, we're going to talk about this, but the pitching priority, you wonder how does that factor into the thinking too, and which comes first. Rick Hahn was on the station on Saturday talking about that, sort of talking around that idea, but you still have Keuchel out there, you still have Ryu out there, you still have Bumgarner out there. You know, Zach Wheeler did not end the Sox pursuit of pitching, so I think that if you prioritize them, pitching probably comes first, but if Castellanos can be had at the winter meetings, go get him.
If anything's real with Mookie Betts, first off, 27-year-old elite Mookie Betts, you do that. And if you're not removing from the core, I mean, yeah, those are very different conversations. But when the Marcell Ozuna report came out on Saturday morning and Rick Hahn just happened to be on the Score minutes before, I doubt he'd be doing an interview on the Score if that was about to go down. But okay, I was a little surprised by the reaction. You tell me you're adding Marcell Ozuna to the South Side a year ago, I'd be going nuts. And people are worried about the corner outfield deep. I mean, really? Really? What he would provide with that bat? I mean, a couple of years ago, there were people saying, wow, this guy could be on pace for an MVP-type season, or at least being on that conversation. I think it was, and he was clearly a disappointment last year in St. Louis. They were expecting more out of him last year, but it's still there. I would put Ozuna number two on the list. I feel like we've been hearing about Jock Peterson for about five different years going to the South Side. But a big positive sign with Castellanos, he knows the pitchers in the division, is the defense was not an issue last season on the North Side. I'd put Castellanos in there third. I don't know if he'd be hitting at the pace that he did with the Cubs at the end of the year.
No, I think that's pretty unrealistic to think that Castellanos would be able to do that for, you know, an entire season or the entire length of his contract, whomever he signs with. I mean, he's only 27 years old. It seems like Nick Castellanos has been around forever, and he's got kind of like that old man goatee where he looks like he's like 40 years old. So it's kind of surprising sometimes. I would love Nick Castellanos or Marcell Ozuna. I'm with you, Mully. Defense be damned. I mean, to just go out there and hit dingers. And that's pretty much, you know, first things first. They need guys that can swing the bat. They need guys that can get on base, can drive in runs. Both of these guys are capable of doing that, Castellanos and Ozuna. So if either one of them signed here, I would be elated with that move. As far as trade options, Jock Peterson, Joe, like you just said, rumored to have been on the move for a while now. I think Rick Hahn or Kenny, one of them, said that Twitter kind of ruined that last year, that they were on the verge of the deal, and then details started leaking out, which is a little disingenuous. But I'm not even going to mention Mookie Betts because that's not realistic to me. And I don't think the White Sox, even though they have kind of ramped up their, you know, hit the gas pedal in the rebuild a little bit with the Grandal signing and their attempts to sign more starting pitching as well, I don't think they're quite there yet where Betts would be brought in, because he's like, you know, the last piece of the puzzle that you bring in on a one-year deal to push you over the top. And I still don't think that they're quite to that point yet. Maybe if this was a year from now, it'd be a different conversation. But I think the White Sox are in a position where they're still kind of, I don't want to say an unknown, but there are a lot of things that have to go right in 2020 if they want to compete like they think they can, apparently.
Well, you know, Mully, you mentioned any of these four guys would look great over 35th and Shields, okay? But selfishly, if it's okay to answer this question, as a fan, I want it to be Marcell Ozuna. And why? Because I want to take another really good player out of the Cubs division. if it's true the Cubs aren't going to spend a bunch of money and we're just waiting for this trade to happen because they can't help themselves and they have to do something, then we need to weaken the teams in the NL Central, okay? And I think that also happened with Milwaukee, right? Milwaukee sent a really good player. You know, the Sox got a good player from Milwaukee, took him out of it. You know, Moustakas left and went to the Reds. I still don't think the Reds can get out of their own way, but we'll have to wait and see. So my pick, for two reasons, is Marcell Ozuna.
Why did this is a White Sox question, and you managed to turn it around and make it about the bloody Cubs?
Well, I asked if it was okay. I put that out there.
Of course not.
Not okay.
Well, I think that's a multifaceted question.
Did the college football playoff get it right by rewarding LSU with the number one seed, or did Ohio State get jobbed? And who do you anticipate winning the national title?
Well, the answer to the last question might be the most fascinating one, because it might not be either Ohio State or LSU. After watching Clemson, you wonder if anybody can beat Clemson, and I don't know if anybody can. I think it's going to be fun to watch. They're the most dangerous team that came out of Saturday for me. But I think you could make the argument for Ohio State. And I didn't go to bed on Saturday night as convinced as some other people possibly that LSU was a clear-cut number one favorite. I think you had to give some thought and have some conversation. Look, LSU had a more impressive Saturday. Ohio State had a more convincing season to me, because I think that when you look at their body of work and who they beat and their schedule, I mean, obviously, Sagarin has – they had the 18th toughest schedule. LSU was 10th. So I think, obviously, there's some numbers that you could twist and say that LSU is obviously played a tougher over opponents, but they beat Alabama, and they looked great in beating Georgia on Saturday. But Ohio State is no slouch. And when you look at, you know, they didn't have any close games or close wins. Like, LSU had three victories with 7 points or less. You could make the argument. I think it might end up being a moot point, but I think you could at least make more of an argument than I heard being made for the Buckeyes on Sunday and for the Big Ten. Does it matter? Absolutely it matters, because there's a big difference in playing Oklahoma and playing Clemson. So I don't know if they got jobbed, but I was surprised at how quickly people abandoned the idea that Ohio State deserved to be number one.
Yeah, you know, it was recency bias. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They did not play a good first half against Wisconsin, and they trailed at halftime, and apparently the voters had already made their mind up.
You're right.
I mean, I don't know what else it would be. I mean, why? Listen, you know, I watched LSU. That was and I watched Ohio State, and I don't know that there's a lot to take away. And I watched all of the games. I don't know that there is this vast difference among teams. I think there were three really good teams, and there's Oklahoma, which might be unfair, but I think that of the three teams, I know a lot of people like Clemson. I still like Ohio State. I still think Ohio State is going to win the national championship. Now, we'll see what happens, and certainly they got a more difficult road, but I think that's the best team in the country. I think it has been all year long. If you look at point differential, if you look at the way they've beaten the good teams, I think they played five teams that were rated highly and won by whatever, significantly more points than LSU managed against the good teams they played. And didn't LSU have a CFB team on their schedule or something? I love Ed. Okay? I love Ed.
Northwestern State.
Okay, so I thought they got mad about that sort of thing. I thought that the college football playoff was supposed to look at that. Whatever. I feel like Ohio State got jobbed. They were number one, and then they weren't, and I'm not quite sure why.
Yeah, I disagree. I think the committee got it right. LSU has the Heisman Trophy winner. When they played, they beat five top 10 teams this season. And I was hearing all last week how Georgia was going to win outright and the SEC was going to get two teams in the Final Four. That game was over quick.
It was not
a competition.
LSU has a Heisman Trophy winner. Ohio State has three guys who probably could be finalists and should be.
But Georgia's got a banged-up quarterback.
Ohio State also
score.
They also struggled down the stretch. They're down by two touchdowns at halftime to Wisconsin. That was a close game against Penn State a couple of weeks ago. So, I give it to LSU.
What was the final score of those games? Come on.
No, I know, but who's beaten LSU all year? It's supposedly the best conference, everyone says, and they're pretty much crushing all of their opponents all season long. Credit to those two teams, though. Who had before the year? Ed Orgeron and Ryan Day are going to have the top two teams in the country.
I said that.
And that's going to be what we're talking about in the end. And, Molly, you brought up the schedule, and you're right. But let's look at Alabama. Last week, if they beat Auburn, they're in. They're in. If Tua's healthy, they're in. Oregon. If they don't schedule Auburn in week one, they schedule a cupcake. What have we learned? We learned that they're in yesterday.
Yeah,
so what is the upside in bringing in these tough non-conference teams? There's absolutely none unless you're looking for some sort of a cash grab. As far as the title winner, I'm going to go with a disrespected and motivated Clemson team. Winning it all with it.
They've earned their disrespect.
Very tough road.
They're playing better now at the end of the year, no doubt about it. The quarterback looks great again, but they were dodgy earlier in the year.
And they're in an awful conference.
I thought you'd go with LSU, Joe. J-E-A-U-X.
Yes, possibly.
That was good.
I'll borrow that one, too. I'll go with LSU as well. I think you kind of know it when you see it, and they've been so dominant. They do have arguably the best player. The best offensive player, at least in the country, at the quarterback position. You know, this is one of those things with college football. There's always going to be nitpicking and, I guess, you know, subjective things that the voters look toward. And it is a lot of recency bias. It's who you play. It's when you play them. It's whatever was the most fresh thing in your mind. So I have no problem with LSU leapfrogging Ohio State. If you're upset about it, play better and put Wisconsin away a little bit earlier if you want those style points and you want to remain number one. That's just kind of how the cookie crumbles.
Ryan Day said that the quarterback was really beaten up all week, that they were having problems with the quarterback, and he ended up being fine, but that you know, he'll be healthy.
Why was he playing?
Because they needed to win in order to be number one.
Yo, they did.
Yeah.
Right. But they were in no matter what, right?
Yeah, but had they played better in the first half, they'd be number one. So
yes.
I think it's probably why.
It's right. They absolutely got it right. I don't know why you would argue, like, well, we want to be two instead of three. Like, what difference does that make? It's not going to matter. You're still playing in the same game. You're still playing the same opponent. The point spread's still going to be the same, whether you're the two or the three. That's not going to change. As far as being disrespecting, go out and whatever it takes, man. Go out and win the game, okay? Go out and win the game. That's all it's all about. Listen, Utah absolutely just...
Yeah.
On right. Friday night,
best
okay?
Yeah.
If anything, you could make the argument... Because Oklahoma needed overtime and had to play three quarterbacks on Baylor, just barely gets the job done, knowing exactly what's on the line. They walk into that game in Jerry World on Saturday morning, early Saturday afternoon, and know exactly what they need to do. Crush Baylor. Crush Baylor and be number four. And they barely got it done. I could make an argument that Oregon maybe should have been the fourth team in because of how they played. You know, they lost to a very good Auburn team on the road early on. And that game seems like it was 6 years ago, let alone that it was in early September.
How much do
or late
they
August.
Regret scheduling Auburn now?
Right, right. So listen, I think it's fine. They got it right. Bravo. I can't wait. I can't wait to see these games.
How'd they get it right when they jumped the team?
Because it was the better team. LSU was LSU on Saturday. Listen, they have to make these games matter. So LSU, Saturday night, eye test, LSU was the better team. Georgia, the next question is, who wins a game between Georgia and Wisconsin?
If they're going to let the committee just take an eye test on Saturday night or Sunday, then they should put it up to let the fans vote in a poll.
Here's why I thought it was going to change. It was not only the struggles against Wisconsin, but I always felt that they bumped Ohio State to number one because they didn't want to have LSU going up against Alabama in the semifinals. Like, if they earn their way to the title game, okay, but we just saw that game.
That's a crazy question. I ain't never been asked that one.
Will the Bulls win three straight games at any point this season, or have they blown that opportunity?
Well, they had their chance, didn't they? And it was a close loss, but a narrow loss, but a loss nonetheless. And boy, I mean, you look at what Golden State's done this year, and they can beat the Bulls, and that's about it, right? So, my God, it's just embarrassing to be that close and to miss. I'm going to say no. I want to say yes, because I believed all along that they would get significantly better as the year went on, that they would improve. But I don't know how they're going to finish games. They haven't shown that ability.
I'm not going to look at the schedule. I'm not going to peek ahead. And I don't need to. And I'm going to say no, because they've given me no reason to believe they can close anything. Friday night, they call a timeout. Clearly, Zach LaVine does not want to call a timeout. They call a timeout. They set up a shot. Bad shot. Misses. They lose to the Warriors. They blow that game down the stretch. They can't close. Sunday night, Tyler Hero standing out there behind the three-point arc. Jimmy Butler. I get it. He's Jimmy Butler. He's shooting. He's not shooting well this year. He stinks from the outside. Obviously, they draw Chris Dunn off him. They leave Tyler Hero all alone. Makes him pay. They can't close. They're not a smart team. Like to see Markkanen have a little bit better fourth quarter. That was nice to see, but they can't get it all together at the same time. Frustrating.
The G League Golden State Warriors have 5 wins on the year. 2 against the Bulls, team in the other conference. 2.
Ouch.
Bulls 4-8 at home, 4-8 on the road. What do they have? I mean, seriously, do they have a good player? If the Bulls were up and everybody was available, would be a free agent, which player are teams knocking it on the door for? Like, yeah, we got to have this guy. We got to sign you.
Sato?
Yeah, he's at the top of the list. Will they win 3 in a row? Are we going to see Otto Porter Jr. again?
That was another great trade, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow, injury. What are you going to do? Oh, shocking. Bulls blaming injury.
Did he have a spinal tap yet?
Jesus. I'll say they will not. If Porter makes a return at some point, they'll have some run, and they'll win 3 meaningless games in a row and hurt the draft pick. But I'll say no.
Oh, these Bulls, man, they're just driving me insane. And I tell myself that they're not good and don't get invested and don't care because they're not good and they're just going to lose to terrible teams and they're going to anger me. Yet I still find myself falling into the trap over and over again. I'm looking at the schedule here. They do have a run of 3 consecutive games, Oklahoma City, Washington, Detroit, coming up in a couple of weeks. That might be the best opportunity, but you know, they've played the softest part of their schedule already so far this season. It's going to get tougher from here on out, and they're 8-16. I don't know what they have. I don't know what the coach is or what the front office is doing. The players, still so many question marks after they've been around for so many years now in the case of some of them. So, I don't know. Were they going to hit the reset button on this thing? Garpak's going to get, like, their 7th rebuild opportunity in a couple years, and then they'll restock the coffers there. I have no idea. They're pathetic.
Yeah, 3 games in a row will be tough. You know, one of the best opportunities starts tonight, okay, against the Raptors. If they can win the Raptors game, they're starting. This is the first of a 4-game homestand, and there's teams coming right behind that you could. Also, I just scrolled through. I have to go all the way into March. Okay, in March there's a stretch where they host the Cavs. They're at the Magic. and then they're at the Heat again. Maybe is that it's tough.
They're I mean, so bad.
It's really
Gee, can't wait.
There aren't a lot of soft spots. This might be, you know, there's one other one. They host the Sacramento Tomato Kings. They're at the Cavs. Then they host the Spurs. I mean, that's another one that's a maybe baby. But I think tonight. It starts tonight, so it would be you'd beat the Raptors, you'd beat the Atlanta Hawks, and then you'd beat the Charlotte Michael Jordans. That would be three in a row, but probably not. I'd bet against it. Is it okay, Joe? Can we get down on that? Can we bet against the Bulls winning three in a row?
No, I don't think so.
All righty, there you have it. That is the 5 at 5. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.